ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, talking all things NFL. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, it's scheduled the day after schedule release day. Joe made me go through every game of the Titans schedule next year and pick a game. Is that a violation? How do we feel?
Look, I'm completely willing to participate in this. I think it's the most overdone thing that the NFL. There's parts of schedule day that I just hate. Like, all these people are texting me things yesterday. You know, I don't understand half of them because I can't watch everything every team does to roll out. You know, so I'm getting like screenshots of the Chargers dissing this guy or that guy.
Oh, Harrison Butker in the kitchen. That's the best thing of the whole day.
That was pretty funny. But, I mean, like, it's just, you know, the whole what they did, the Pop-Tarts thread, yeah, which some people didn't get the jokes. I thought some of them were – I'm curious what they meant by some of them. Like, it's an interesting day, to say the least, but it's taken on a whole life of its own now. We got to – It's mid-May. They got to figure something out to make this stretch as long as we possibly can. So I don't know what else they can do. I would not be surprised, though, honestly, if they don't turn this into more of a dragged out kind of situation.
Oh, gosh,
where they try to do it over. I would not be surprised if they try to do it over multiple days at some point rather than a one day dump.
Well, they kind of did, though. I mean, they kind of did. And they threw out a Monday night and they threw out a Sunday night, right? I mean, they kind of teased.
Yeah.
But you're talking even more. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about an even more built up rollout than they do now. Because now they do the whole, well, we're going to leak some games through the partners. And actually, the most fascinating thing about this release was it was on an internal calendar at the NFL. It was supposed to happen last Thursday, as in like a week ago. And as we got closer, everybody at all the networks, they were like, what's going on? And they're like, how come we don't have the schedule? Like all of a sudden, everybody that had programming set up, they were scrambling. Like literally all the networks were scrambling because they're like, we don't have there's no word that this is actually coming on the date when we were supposed to expect it. And so there was a lot of speculation that was going on behind the scenes at like, you know, ESPN and Amazon and NBC about like, is this because the NFL Network, they fired so many people, so they're going to have issues with their own rollout or whatever? No, it turns out they were just nailing down more money from Netflix, you know, and that's what delayed the whole thing. And so now we know what is a Christmas Day game worth? $75 million. What are two Christmas Day games worth? $150 million. That's a heck of a lot of money for Christmas Day games. So it was fascinating to me that they dragged out, you know, negotiations on those Christmas Day games as late as they possibly could to squeeze as much money out of Netflix as they ultimately got. But overall, I'm like a curmudgeon about schedule day release. I hate to say it. I just get too in the weeds on the whole thing. So
yep, I'm with you for the most part. So Charles, we do know that the Chicago Bears and the Titans are the first game on Caleb Williams' schedule here. So
yeah,
the Titans,
they don't like that
up
in Chicago. They're ripping that hardcore in Chicago.
Were they?
Saw that.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I saw those just complaining. They're like, oh, this is the team we got to kick this. I hope the Titans beat the crap out of people this year because instantly I see all this like, you know, blowback from Chicago about like, really all this Caleb Williams, we're celebrating the Caleb Williams hype and now we got to start off with the Titans. I'm like, what a bunch of Jags, man. I tweeted out yesterday. I was like, I said, man, look at the Patriots, look at all the quarterbacks the Patriots face this year. Like, you could argue, other than Levis, every single quarterback they face in 2024 could be considered a top five, a top 15 quarterback. And then, you know, somebody in Twitter just starts ripping on Levis, and I'm like, we're really just, is that it? We're just going to judge somebody on a really small time frame behind a rough offensive line. Like, so you're just out on this guy. Like, he's trash. Like, he's guard. Like, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I just hope the Titans, I hope there's just like a revenge tour this year where they're sick of everybody's, you know, ripping on Levis. They're sick of everybody just, you know, trashing this team. And it's not just because I do this spot. I'm tired of people complaining about, you know, Will Levis and the Titans not being, you know, worthy of opening your season against Caleb Williams. Oh my God, poor Caleb Williams. Now he's got to face the Titans.
So wait, so it's like, oh, it's too easy for Caleb. We want a real team.
Well, they don't think it's marquee enough, right?
Gotcha,
they don't think it's someone's like, okay, all right, whatever. Like,
making him play a USFL game to start. God,
yeah, it's trash. So, but I, if you're a Titans fan, I mean, it's an interesting to me. I love the quarterback matchups. That's what I end up looking at when the schedule rolls out and kind of when. You know, I looked at the six first-round quarterbacks and kind of I'm like, all right, one of these guys, you know, we know a couple of them, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, are definitely, you know, they're supposed to be week one starters. When we look at, you know, Drake, Bo Nix too. So those are three that I'm like, all right, out of the gate, these guys should be on the field week one. But then you look at like Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, you're like, all right, if they don't start, where on the schedule can you realistically see them starting? And then, like with Penix and Atlanta, I'm kind of like, all right, well, let's look at the last game of the season. You know, I think they play the Panthers the last game of the season. Atlanta does, and if you figure if they're out of it, either in a positive way, hey, there's nothing to play for in Week 18, we got it locked up. Penix could see the field in Week 18 the way that Mahomes did, you know, his rookie season with the Chiefs. He played the last game of the season, and you know, and then if. But if they're out of it and there's nothing to play for, they're just out of the playoffs, I think Penix could see the field the last game of the season too. So I like to look at the quarterback matchups and just kind of see, you know, who's playing what and where.
To your point on the Titans, I was saying this earlier, Charles, our buddy Burkett, I read his Lions predictions, and every game is like 21-20, 23-20, 27-20. It's like Lions 40, Titans 3, or whatever. I'm like, geez, people think they are
really?
Just absolute. It wasn't that bad. It was like 34-10 or something. I was like, geez, they just think they're total trash.
Man, that is such I just don't get it. Like, I don't know why I'm the disconnect, why I seem to be higher on. I like the coaching staff, you know. I like the moves that they made, like, to, you know, revamp the coaching staff. I like the draft. I like I like Levis's tools. Like, I don't know. I'm just like, what is going on? How come I feel so disconnected from everyone else when it comes to this team? And I'm like, I just don't get why people just seem to dislike Levis so much. I'm like, the guy's got great tools. What did he do to upset you last year?
Like, don't ever do mayo in a TikTok. Yeah, I mean, that's right.
God.
Like, I don't know.
You just get over the stupid stuff. Like, it's we're past it already. Like, just move on. Like, appreciate what he brings to the table. You should hope he plays really well. I hope every quarterback in the league plays well. I don't want to see trash quarterbacks in the league, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty stupid. One thing about Caleb Williams is interesting, though. He plays the entire he plays the top four quarterbacks from the 2023 draft in the first 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
He plays Levis, he plays Bryce, he plays Anthony Richardson and Stroud for the first five games of the season. I think it's interesting. You know, you got like this guy is supposed to be the generational quarterback, and he's going to measure up against the top four quarterbacks from the previous season. That's kind of fun.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, Charles, but of the other 31 teams, maybe even a rough guess from conversations, how many of those other 31 think that highly of him, would you suppose? You know,
think that highly of who?
Of Caleb Williams. Like, he's clearly the guy. Because we had Diana Rossini on earlier. She said she talked to a team who actually liked Daniels better than him. I've heard a little bit of that. Of the other 31, how many do you think – and I know some teams evaluated quarterbacks way harder than others, but still, just had that opinion of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. This would be like a total guess, but, you know, I'd probably say 3 out of every 4, you know. And again, we're talking about different people and organizations, too. Like, there's some people in organizations that hate him, others that like, you know, love him. Like, it's, you know, he had, like, I'll give you an example. Like, one organization that I think does like him, they had a meeting at the combine, and he got asked, he was asked, how come you're sitting out things? You know, like, what's going on? What are you doing? And Caleb answered, well, you know, something along the lines of, like, my team and I thought, you know, this wasn't, you know, this just wasn't the right time to do these things or whatever. And a very prominent person in the meeting on that particular team was like, yeah, your team is not what you just said. The team is the team that drafts you. I was like, I don't know if they like him anymore after I heard how this interview went. So, you know, things like that you have to take with a grain of salt. So we'll find out fast on Caleb. I guess that's what I'm kind of saying is that, you know, their lineup, they do play a lot of talented teams. And I like the fact that you're going to see a lot of the recently drafted quarterback talent all running up against each other pretty quickly in the season.
Charles, what do you think of the Jared Goff contract? 4 years, $212 million, $170 million guaranteed. What do you think of the deal, and what do you think of the window now for the Lions to try to punch their ticket to a Super Bowl?
To me, it wasn't surprising. I think I was probably surprised by people who are like, wow, that's a ton of money. I'm like, what did you expect? This is what, especially for a guy that, you know, takes you to the NFC title game, who if a couple of decisions go a different way, or Josh Reynolds catches a pass, or Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't fumble, you know, they could have taken him to the Super Bowl last year. And the way that city has galvanized around him, like anytime he's anywhere in Detroit, they're chanting his name. It's crazy. And like he got to Detroit. He was like, I want to be here. That's exactly what Detroit fans wanted to hear. Then he performed on the field. And now it's you're a $50 million quarterback. If you have above average ability, and you know, you can take a team, you know, you can actually win games, you can be part of the solution in a playoff scenario, you're going to be a $50 million quarterback, which is why I think I'll be shocked if Jordan Love isn't a $50 million quarterback. Tua isn't a $50 million quarterback. Trevor Lawrence isn't a $50 million quarterback. Dak could be a $60 million quarterback by the time he gets to free agency next year. This is just the new normal. Like, it's the second tier quarterbacks, I think, are now, you know, the basement is 35. Like, if you're a starter who's not considered just a bridge 1 year answer, you know, if you're signing a 4 year deal, but you're considered like mid level, you're in the 40s. It's just where the position's ultimately going. And I think Goff was a reflection of that. And I think the Lions too, that was part of a really, really good offseason for them. You extend Brad Holmes, the GM. You extend Dan Campbell, the head coach. Penei Sewell gets his extension. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jared Goff. They're getting all their building blocks in place long term. And I think if you're a Lions fan, that's the only thing you can hope for. Ownership spends and spends and spends to make sure everybody remains locked up. And Goff's a great story, by the way, to me, for the NFL. I think when you see a team kick a player to the curb, and that's really what Sean McVay did with Goff. It's great to me when you see that player then go and flourish elsewhere. And for a team in a city that really, let's be honest, I mean, prior to it coming together for him there, they were a joke, right? And now it's weirdly enough, it seems like a lot of people around the league, a lot of fans like around the league like the Lions because there's not a reason to hate them. So good story for Detroit.
He is a great story. The Lions will blow it and ruin everyone's lives, but he is a great story. There's no doubt.
They will until they don't, right? I mean, that's just what you kind of have to – I was covering that game, the NFC title game with Dan Wetzel. We're sitting there, and my editor, who you know, Al Tobey, who's on
the – Three Michigan guys in a press box.
Three Michigan guys in a press box.
I mean, Wetzel's an adopted Michigan guy.
Adopted Michigan. Well, he lives in Detroit, you know, Metro Detroit. And so we're sitting there, and he obviously knows the Lions' history and everything. And so Al texts us. It's like in the third quarter, and he says, hey, you know, get me your Lions, like, going to the Super Bowl, like, angles right now.
Good job, Al. Now we know.
Right? The second he did it. And so immediately there's a reversal, and they go for it on fourth. They don't get it. And Wetzel turns to me and he goes, they're going to lose. As soon as they went for on fourth and it didn't happen. And I'm like, come on, man. I'm like, knock it off. Like, just get over it. And then Gibbs, like, the next time they all Gibbs fumbles. And he turns to me, he's like, it's over. It's over right now.
The game is over.
And yeah, it's ridiculous.
Freaking Al. It would have been fine, but Al screwed it up. All right, good to know. I got to have to text him after the show.
You know, whatever you do, don't say anything around his wife, because she was really upset they lost, and he was like, don't tell her.
It wasn't me. Yeah, Makisha is a diehard. Jeez, man.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you brought up Goff, though, because I want to throw this take at you, Charles. So I claim that if you put Jared Goff in this offense of the Tennessee Titans the past years, with this freaking offensive line, he would be an unpaid dude looking for a job right now. And that if Ryan Tannehill would have been in his place with the Lions, they could have gone as far as they did. I mean, I think they're very close in quality as QBs. Am I crazy? Is that insane? And why the heck doesn't Tannehill have a job?
Okay, the only thing I would say about that is Goff did perform at an MVP level for the Rams. Like, he was, and he did take the Rams to a Super Bowl.
Fair.
Like, he did go toe-to-toe with Mahomes and the Chiefs in probably the wildest Monday Night Football game we've ever seen in history. That one where it was like, you know, in the
54-51, yeah.
Yeah, it was insanity. So, I mean, like, he has played at a level where I think people forget there was a time where we were staring at Jared Goff going, oh, my God, like, this guy could be a 50-touchdown quarterback under Sean McVay with the pieces that they had around him. I don't know that Tannehill's had great seasons. There's no question about that. And especially when he's been healthy and you've kind of seen the athletic versatility that he brings to the table. I think there's like this parallel universe where Tannehill, if he never gets hurt, is one of these quarterbacks that we look at and we go, wow, like this guy, the athleticism he brought to the table, you know, rounded into form as a passer, you know, is potentially puts together like a Hall of Fame type of career if he plays 15 years healthy and in an organization that, you know, maybe one organization that surrounds him with talent. Obviously, that didn't happen. I don't know last year, you know, where Tannehill is at this point in his career. Remember, you know, Goff's still pretty young. I do think that getting out from under McVay forced him to grow a little bit as a player, kind of getting into a position where he had a coach turn his back on him. Like, he really did walk into Detroit with a chip on his shoulder. I think he's really upset about what happened. And I think that did change him a little bit in terms of like his play style on the field. He looked like a less timid player to me. So I think he actually got better last year. I do agree with you though. If you flip flop the situations and you put him behind an offensive line where he's getting hammered, big difference. You know, he definitely doesn't get that extension. We're probably talking about, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, where it's like Baker Mayfield between year three and year four for the Browns. He won a playoff game in year three. It looks like he's signing a contract extension. He's going to be the Browns guy for the next, you know, 5-6 years. Year four, he's awful, objectively. There's injuries around
and
him.
And hurt.
Yeah, and hurt. And then what happens? He's gone. And so, you know, yeah, I think you put Goff in Tennessee, there's a chance that, you know, he's probably getting cut or he's in free agency, you know, rather than getting a contract extension. What the surrounding players, I don't think it's a mystery. Like, if you surround a quarterback with a bunch of first round offensive line talent, you know, you give them depth in the backfield, like it's quarterbacks are still functional, a lot of the players around him. So I think Goff, there's a percentage of his game that definitely is similar to that. You love Tannehill, by the way. Like, well, Joe, you bring up more Tannehill conversations.
He loves him some Ryan Tannehill.
There's not a Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins lover in the country more than Joe Retro.
But listen, it's just because there's so many people here are like, God, he sucked. Get him out of here. Awful. And it's like, man, there just aren't many guys who would have had a chance here. So it's really
the way that line, come on.
Yeah.
The way the line deteriorated, there's no way. You can't. And I'm not like a huge, I wouldn't say I'm like a huge Tannehill guy. Like, I think when we had that argument about what was Deshaun Watson's last good year in the NFL, where he got the Pro Bowl nod, and we kind of were like, well, you know, what about Tannehill? See, like, I think people forget that Tannehill played at that level, especially outside of Tennessee, forget that he played at that level, you know, for the Titans. And again, when he was healthy, he brought a versatility to the game, a level of athleticism that it's celebrated in so many other quarterbacks, but he just never had the long runway where it was like, here's 6, 7, 8 seasons where he's surrounded by talent, a front office keeps in place, and he stays healthy and on the field. Had he had that, I think, you know, probably a lot of people talk about him in a different way. So,
Charles, on the Anthony Richardson front, obviously, I mean, he got in early last year. He suffers the injury, and it's in some ways kind of a lost season for him. Based on what you've heard about him this offseason and heading into year two, what are the expectations around him? Where do we think Anthony Richardson is right now in terms of as you're trying to forecast this division moving forward? I mean, it's a heck of a division when it comes to the quarterbacks. Levis, Richardson, Stroud, Lawrence. It's very intriguing.
Yeah, it is. And the thing to me is just, the projection on him is so crazy. Like, you know, people are talking about like maybe he's like a dark horse MVP candidate in year two. And I'm like, we haven't even seen this guy. He's like on the field, like basically 4 games. And this is what, and he got hurt. He was hurt like constantly in that limited window. And he's no different to me than he was coming into last season in terms of this severe need for reps and to round out as a passer. I do think that what he showcased in the limited time that he played last year was, he seemed definitive in terms of some of the decisions he was making. It wasn't like you watched him, you're like, oh my God, he's coming unraveled. This was a huge mistake. Instead, it was like, wow, instantly you see the upside. You see the arm, you see his ability to manipulate, you know, defenses with his athleticism, ability to move off script and create plays out of structure. But it was such a small snapshot. Like, what bothers me about everyone looking at him and just going, this is going to be this, you know, ascent into greatness as long as he can stay on the field is, let's see him put some stuff on tape and then defensive coordinators start to screw with him, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's see when he runs into a Brian Flores type who's like, guess what? I'm going to show you so many defensive looks pre and post snap. You're going to be losing your mind. And so is your OC as he prepares for this. And so is Shane Steichen as he prepares for our game plan, because you're not going to have any clue what you're looking at for the vast majority of the game. Like, let's see him get put into a situation where teams understand the things he does worst, and then they push him into that repeatedly. I just think as much success, I guess surprising success, at least to me, that the Colts had last year after his injury, the Colts could also be 4-13 this year, and I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Richardson has a really rough season. We still don't know what he is. So I think the talent was there. It was fun to watch. I get it. I remember a GM told me, like, I was asking him, I don't remember if it was before, it was like during the draft process, if it was after, I think it might even been in the preseason. He said something to me like, you know, Richardson's going to have like the most fun 5 for 17 games you've ever seen in your life. Like, it was just, he was just like, that's how much fun he is to watch. And that's what he brings to the table. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of struggles for the Colts to deal with. We, you know, let's wait. And by the way, and I'm not saying he's going to roll back, and I'm not saying there are going to be problems, but, you know, let's see with C.J. Stroud, too. I mean, there's just this presumption that Stroud showed us what he showed us in year one, and now he's going to be on this, like, Hall of Fame trajectory. And I think back to, like, Justin Herbert. Like, Justin Herbert came out of the gate smoking, not the way Stroud did, granted, you know, best passing season ever, you know, from a rookie. But let's see some injuries around him. Let's see, again, as teams kind of figure out what he does or doesn't do, let's see what Stephon Diggs being injected into that wide receiver room and into that offense do, you know, from the standpoint of, and maybe he won't year one, but he's going to be a player that will challenge the coaches to get him the ball more. He will challenge C.J. Stroud to make him a priority. You know, let's see how Stroud handles that. So, these early, you know, looks at quarterbacks, now we assume that they're headed for greatness. And then, you know, once the wheels start falling off, things change pretty quickly. It wasn't that long ago that, like, the Falcons brass had convinced Arthur Blank that Desmond Ridder was going to be their quarterback for like the next like 10 years. Right. And now not only is he not on the roster, they have two completely different guys sitting there.
Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. And we'll talk to you next week.
Real quick before we go, we got to say this, right? Because Joe brought it up to me when we were texting earlier. So last year you needed, CBS, Fox, NBC, ABC, ESPN, NFL Network, Peacock, ESPN Plus, Amazon Prime to watch all that.
Correct.
Now you add Netflix that. good luck. Good luck finding. This is how, by the way, this is it. This is how they reach Roger Goodell. I can't remember what year it was. He was in the owners' meeting. He stood up in front of the owners. He said, my goal before I'm out of here as commissioner, we're going to be making $25 billion a year in revenue, and we're going to get there. And the owners were like, by the time you get out, like, you're going to be here till like 2050. It just seemed like such an unrealistic. But you know what changed? The gambling stuff changed. All the ancillary money they could make, you know, with the gambling partnerships. And then this, I think the streaming, these are the two avenues that I would not be surprised that they continue to dice this up as much as they possibly can to push, to extract as much money out of whatever network wants. Tubi at some point is going to be like, hey, we'll give you $150 million per game on Christmas Day. And they'll be like, we're going to have games on Tubi.
Wild the way this is all going down. Charles, great stuff, man. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp on the road. Pregame at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. I have tickets to give away to see Bill Burr tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Boom. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Bill Burr at Bridgestone Arena coming up tomorrow night.
Looking forward to it. I saw him last time he was there, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to miss that dude next time he's around. Yeah. So I'm not.
There you go.
He's pretty funny. But he will offend everyone.
Yes, he will.
He will offend you
in some way.
It will happen. I promise you.
At some point.
Hang in there. A lot of talk on the text line. I want to address a couple things. Okay. First of all, had some discourse about washing my hair in a sink in O'Hare Airport. I tweeted out a picture of the sink. Everybody's different. You know, like my wife, like I think she washes her hair like once a week or something like that. If I do not wash my hair, and I'm sorry to have this conversation, I know for you, you're like, yeah, shut up, dude. But if I don't wash my hair, it had been more than 24 hours. And if I don't wash my hair at least once every 24 hours, it's very bad. I can't even function.
It's kind of ugly, though.
Thank you. And also, I think I've told this story, but we had to wake up super early the day before and go out at like 6 a.m. to the aircraft carrier and take all of our electronics because President Obama was coming in for the game. So you had to leave your computer
Secret
there
service.
All day. Seriously, to be like inspected and scanned. And so like I had been up for like a long time and I had to wash my hair in the sink. I'm also getting a lot of strays here on the Tannehill thing. Look, Mariota wasn't good enough.
I was wondering why you wore your Tannehill jersey today.
Hey, Mariota wasn't good enough, and I – as that went on, realized I was wrong, and that's fine. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, if you think that Tannehill, he totally botched the Cincinnati game, and I think you're right that he has lost some of the fastball. You know, but like I will argue until I'm blue in the face, and not because there's any sort of personal, you know, whatever. He's fine, but he's a good quarterback. And it's just my biggest beef with this whole thing is just quarterback's most important thing. We focus on the quarterbacks. It's all about the quarterbacks. Teams are constantly looking for the quarterbacks. But I don't think people put enough stock in. Like, if the conditions are bad, I don't give a crap who he is. And if the conditions are good, he can make a lot of things better. And there's just so many quarterback careers in this league that could have gone completely 180 from what they were in different situations, good and bad. And I'll never stop believing that.
Well, and look, I think the Tannehill part of this, I think you're being disingenuous if you don't recognize that he is at worst the second best quarterback in Titans history. That's what he is. He's the second best quarterback in Titans history. McNair is one. He is too. I had somebody yelling at me about Warren Moon yesterday.
He's like, Oilers.
Yeah, he's Oilers. We're just talking Titans.
Yeah. I mean, Warren Moon is the best in the franchise history, but not Titans history.
Correct. So he's clear. The hope is, and I think, I mean, I hope this. Most Titans fans, all Titans fans hope this. The hope is that Will Levis eventually blows Ryan Tannehill out of the water with the way that he plays here, and that he becomes the best quarterback in Titans history, right? I mean, that's the hope, that you continue to find people moving forward that are better. That way you do look back at some point on the history of Titans quarterbacks and say, yeah, Tannehill's nice. He's nice. But right now, I mean, Tannehill, I said it yesterday, you can make a pretty strong argument that the fourth-round pick to go get him was maybe the best move that John Robinson made.
Yeah,
maybe.
And I actually feel better about, in this reverse situation conversation, I actually feel better about Goff completely being ineffective here with this offense. He really would have been, guys, because he can't move. The thing about Goff is, like, he is very much dependent on protection, just like Kirk Cousins, more than Tannehill. Both of them more than Tannehill on protection. It would have been terrible for him. He would not have $212 million that he would have just signed for. He'd maybe be looking for a job. I can't say for sure Tannehill goes to that Lions team and he takes them where they did. Goff was really good. And then, you know, Charles brings up a fair point. Goff was the number one pick. Goff did have success with the Rams. I think a lot of it, I believed, it was like McVay and that scheme, and they're ahead of everybody.
So they clearly felt like they needed another quarterback.
They felt that way. Yeah. I wonder what they think now. I mean, I think this is also a thing that we struggle with, and I do too sometimes. The idea that at 26, 28, someone can improve.
Yeah.
Someone can figure something out that's not working or be extra motivated, do one-arm push-ups for a week, and improve. And I think that is definitely part of the Goff story.
I think that's definitely part of the Goff story. It was interesting to get Charles's thoughts, too, on, like, the Levis situation here. First off, Charles seems like a big Titans fan this year. Root for the Titans.
He's such
to do
a
very
homer.
Well.
He's such a Texans hater and Titans lover.
Rooting for the Titans to do very well. Another part of the discourse that has bothered me a little bit this offseason, I don't spend a ton of time worrying about it because it is what it is. But, like, the idea of, like, well, Will Levis, he's not very good. He's shown that he can't be very good. We've barely seen him play. But, oh, yeah, Anthony Richardson's going to be great. It's like, well, Anthony Richardson has shown less than Will Levis has at this point in his career. Not that Anthony Richardson can't be great, because,
well,
I think he can.
Well, he showed less in college, too.
Exactly. So that is one part of the offseason discourse that has baffled me a little bit. Anthony Richardson's back this year. Watch out for the Colts.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, how do we know what that's going to mean?
Yeah. He's one of the most interesting guys in the league this year to me. He really is. I think they both are. But I think that also traces back to, so combine time, it's like, whatever. Levis took a bag of peanuts or whatever the hell people are talking about. And Richardson was the most athletic quarterback ever tested in Indy.
In history,
right?
Of combine.
So the combine last year was, oh, my God, Anthony Richardson. And, ew, Levis, what's going on with him? Which, again, how much of that was misinformation intentionally? I know some people close to him think there was some of that. And that happens. But it is. If you still think there's nothing that's been demonstrated by Will Levis, or that any of the stuff talked about with the personality of Mayo is still relevant now, then you just aren't paying attention.
Join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June the 20th for the 615 Open. Make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. Sign up to play or to sponsor at 615open.com. We'll have more on the Titans coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Yeah.
Nashville's best deal of the week is Bavarian Beer House, conveniently located at Opry Mills Mall. Enjoy beer, food, music, and fun at Nashville's only authentic German beer hall, where it's Oktoberfest every single day. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals now to get a $50 gift card for only $25 to Bavarian Beer House while supplies last. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. The schedule is out. We went through the schedule game by game earlier, which, as Rexroad pointed out, we will attempt to do every day from here to the season beginning.
Yep, right now 8-9. You're 7-10, but what will we be on Friday the 17th? We'll find out tomorrow.
Who knows?
I think we need to spend a whole hour on it tomorrow, though.
I think so. More schedule talk. In all seriousness, looking at the schedule, what are some areas of it that stand out to you? The one thing that really stood out to me when I looked at it yesterday was the opening part of it. First off, the bye weeks in week five. Jeffrey Simmons, not a big fan of that, tweeted about that yesterday. I can understand NFL players not loving having a week five bye. But we've talked about the idea of maybe this group taking some time to gel together and what that could mean. It's a pretty difficult first four games when you just kind of weigh the whole scale of it. You're at Chicago to start, home against New York, the Jets, and Green Bay, and then on the road, Monday Night Football in Miami. Those are three pretty good teams, we think, and then one team that I don't really know what they're going to be in Chicago. It really just kind of depends on how ready Caleb Williams is at this point, but I thought that's a pretty difficult start for them, given some of the other options that were available on the schedule.
Yeah. That is the toughest stretch of the beyond the two game in October.
Buffalo-Detroit. Yeah,
the two game in October road, Buffalo-Detroit back-to-back. The opening is – it's a critical part of the schedule. And, of course, the closing is all the division games, which I don't like. I really don't like that. You mentioned it earlier. Jacksonville there's two games. We have seen before, like, game against a division opponent, one game in between, and then another.
Yeah, same
which
one.
Is stupid. Trash.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking about Houston both times, from November 24th on, Houston both times, Jacksonville both times, and Indy once.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of division games in the last
goofy.
Couple weeks.
Yeah. I mean, look, it is interesting, by the way, that the schedule maker made it Houston at Titans at the end. Does that mean that the schedule maker thinks more of the Titans than because a lot of times you see these, you know, obviously at the last week of the season is always division rivals, which is great. But usually it kind of gets put together like the two teams you might expect to be at the top of the division.
Maybe.
Is the NFL telling us something now?
I mean, last
year, NFL respect the Titans more than NFL media.
Last year it was Titans-Jags. Here
right.
in Nashville.
And that made sense.
That made sense at the time.
They were the top two the year before.
Yeah.
The year before, it was Titans-Jags also, when the Titans were the clear favorites and they had a four-game lead at Thanksgiving. But anyway, it worked out that way. So now it's Texans-Titans. Interesting.
Is there going to be a year where they don't play the Bengals? I mean, I know this is not breaking news yesterday that we knew they were playing the Bengals, but they played them a lot recently.
They have. Played
them a whole lot.
They've played them a lot recently, and you know, in the last three games that they've played the Bengals, Brian Callahan's offense against Mike Vrabel's defense averaged 14 points a game.
Not very good.
Now, of course, that includes the three last year with Burrow able to throw the ball about 8 yards downfield. But still, yeah, it's become a little bit of a rivalry, and it's a drivable one.
I think when you look at the schedule, the window of opportunity for this team maybe to put together some wins, kind of to me, starts in New England, right? New England at the Chargers, home against Minnesota. That's a three-game stretch in the middle of the year that I think is going to be really important in terms of, like, if you're the Titans, those are winnable games on paper that you need to find a way to take advantage of. Like, it would be great to get to the last five games. We mentioned it earlier. Of your last five games, four of them are in the division. If you can get to that point where you're still alive and have a chance to, in some ways, kind of control your destiny down the stretch there, that would be great. But you got to get there first if you're the Titans.
Right. That stretch, you have to win at least – you have to win the two home games. New England, Minnesota, I mean, I think those are probably
– they shouldn't be very good.
The two easiest games on the schedule, right? And they're two out of 3 weeks at home. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. And then
Washington, depending on how you view them.
Yeah, that's true. And then shortly after that, you're at Washington. You got Jacksonville home. You got a chance to make some hay there in November and early December to give yourself a relevant December. I had them relevant in December in my go-around. You basically did too, though, right? You just came up a game short of me. Indy Ben has a reasonable take, by the way.
Okay.
He says, Levis also rubbed you the wrong way with his reported cockiness and decision-making on the field. Many compared him to Wentz, whereas Richardson's ceiling was much higher if he fell in the right scenario. Yeah, I mean, I remember the talk. And, again, ceiling was absolutely – is still the talk with Richardson. And I agree it's high. I absolutely agree it's high.
For sure. I think ceiling with Levis is pretty high.
I do too.
Maybe not as high as Richardson, but I think it's pretty high.
The Wentz – do you remember the Wentz comparisons? I don't necessarily remember that. But
well, I think the Wentz – like the Wentz stuff happened after he was already in the league, right? Like it wasn't Wentz in the draft process cockiness, and I mean there was the thing of like maybe Carson Wentz isn't a great teammate, and his teammates don't really like him all that much. I've heard some of that.
Have people said that about Will Levis?
I don't think so. But like heading in, that was a part of the conversation on him draft process wise of just being cocky. Right?
Yeah. Again, we talked about all this stuff. We don't
some
need
of that's just naturally quarterback though. But
yeah, whatever. I mean, in Kentucky, they like immediately voted him a captain. I guess did they hate him? But
I don't think so.
Were they afraid of him? He's a big dude. They just vote him captain so he wouldn't beat him up.
Maybe that's why they get rid of Vrabel. You know what? Can't have the coach be big and the quarterback be big.
That's right. Yeah.
And then draft sweat.
People are – yeah, right?
You imagine? This massive locker room in there.
Hope Sweat doesn't coach any time. There's some GMs in this league that would not touch him.
They would not. Big football players. We end the show again on big football players. Garski was excited about
more
that
body shaming. Lots of, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Big
there,
football players.
There are
players.
Some players that are big in the NFL. Oh, I did love that. I'm just glad that the schedule release is over. Like, it's one of the funniest things to me every year. And I guess in some ways we're guilty of it, of, hey, the NFL schedule is coming out today. It's great. We already know who they're playing, right? You just know the dates now in which it's happening. Which I understand, like, if you're traveling to a game, that's important information. I mean, I booked a flight yesterday.
Sure.
So
yeah,
it's important information.
No, I mean, I booked stuff yesterday. A lot of people did. That's great. So just put it on the internet and we'll do that.
But people were like, 15 minutes until the schedule last night.
Like a countdown clock.
We'll see it when it gets there.
No, I went to NFL Network. It's like it was like some documentary. It was like countdown clock. Good God. I will say, I do like the social media teams doing what they do, and some of them are funny. I mean,
I look forward to your article.
Well, you put it. I mean, what better usage is there of a social media team?
Probably not.
I mean,
probably not one.
I probably pay more attention to what they're doing this time of year than any other time, right?
I would assume.
So that's a good development.
That does it for us today. Chase and Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1,000,000 SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.